This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
British Columbia is a province that will suffer significant impacts from climate change. There'll be longer droughts and more forest fires. Cities will have to cope with rising sea levels. Salmon stocks will suffer. But you could be forgiven for thinking that the Christie Clark government hadn't noticed any of this if Tuesday's provincial budget is an indication. There's no money for alternative energy, no action on climate adaptation or food security, but plenty of investment in projects that will increase our greenhouse gas emissions. Gwen Barley is National Policy Director with the Wilderness Committee. She joins me on the line this morning to talk about the BC budget. Hello, Gwen.
Hello.
Gwen, in your point of view, what was the biggest disappointment in the budget?
I think the biggest disappointment, there were several, was that the carbon tax is still at $30 a ton. It needs to at least move up to $40 and continue to grow. Also, instead of really investing in public transportation, instead the BC government put earmarked $3.4 billion, predominantly in public monies over the next 3 years, for highway expansion and other transportation initiatives. Something that was also very disappointing, BC Hydro really is our best tool against climate change, and it's been saddled with an enormous debt because the BC government wants to move ahead with Site C, which is a massive dam project. And most people don't realize that electricity usage in BC has flatlined and even declined a little bit since 2008, and so we have no need for the government to go ahead with a $10.8 billion probably up to $10.8 billion Site C project. And there's lots of missed opportunities. And the government, even though the LNG market is extraordinarily deflated in North America and going down rapidly, prices in Asia, the government's still trying to say that we're going to have a viable LNG industry in British Columbia. And so when, you know, this is just a couple of months after the climate change summit in Paris, when all sorts of promises were made. And so it's very disappointing to see that the government appears to have lost its way when it comes to tackling climate change and protecting the environment.
And do you want to talk a little bit more about what kind of impact on greenhouse gas emissions that the Site C dam is going to have?
Well, the Site C dam, and a lot of people think, oh my gosh, we need this massive amount of low-carbon energy, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do green energy, and Site C is the wrong way to do low-carbon electricity. And so, again, it's a project. Right now it's earmarked at $8.8 billion, and likely when you take into account cost overruns that have happened at other mega projects, probably by the time it gets, if it gets built, the government's just in the process of having the land cleared, you're easily looking at $10, $11, $12 billion. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't need the electricity in British Columbia. And if we did need the electricity in British Columbia, we could revisit the Columbia River Treaty. And what the Columbia River Treaty is we in the Kootenays, we store water for the Americans, and they produce power in the States. And we're entitled benefits to benefits from storing that water. And we could get the equivalent amount of energy that Site C would produce from the Columbia River Treaty. So if we did need the electricity, which we don't at this time, the first thing you would do is you would revisit the Columbia River Treaty. First Nations are very much opposed to Site C and the impact it would have on traditional use of the land. There was also going to be, Site C would be flooding 107 kilometers of valley bottom. It would have a very big impact on agricultural land reserve lands. And you just don't need to flush $10 billion down the drain. And as if that weren't enough, the electricity coming in from Site C would be at $100, around $100, maybe $110 a megawatt hour, and that's a unit of electricity. And BC Hydro can buy electricity such as that on the open market for about $25 a megawatt hour, which is a massive, massive cost savings. And so we need to do low-carbon energy the smart way in British Columbia and not saddle BC Hydro with an enormous debt and ratepayers across British Columbia with enormous debt for electricity that we don't need.
And on the topic of greenhouse gas emissions, do you want to talk a little bit more about how they addressed public transit?
Well, they didn't really address public transit. That there's sort of a standard budget item, and I think it's around $300 million a year, which sounds like a lot of money, but in the scheme of things, you desperately need rapid transit in Surrey, Vancouver, and other public transportation opportunities right across British Columbia. And the government just, I think, increased the amount that they're giving to public transportation by $12 million over 3 years, which is very, very little. And then you compare that with the massive amount of money, the billions of dollars that are that's earmarked for highway expansion. And then, of course, when you're prioritizing highway expansion and car and truck use over public transportation, you're going to see a corresponding increase in greenhouse gas emissions. And we don't have the privilege or the opportunity right now to put off to tomorrow what needs to be done today to tackle greenhouse gas emissions. Greenhouse gas emissions worldwide are supposed to, you know, by 2020 are supposed to reach their sort of the maximum amount of greenhouse gas emissions, and that's supposed to be a lowering if we're to prevent catastrophic climate change. And so we need the BC government, instead of, putting off increasing the carbon tax, instead of not properly investing in public transportation, we need them to take the challenge of climate change very seriously, that we've seen what happened last year with the horrendous forest fires and warming oceans, and you have mountain pine beetle epidemics, because in the past, mountain pine beetles were killed by cold winter snaps. And we aren't seeing the cold winter snaps that we used to see. And you're also seeing temperatures are increasing in rivers and creeks so rapidly that some of those rivers and creeks can't support salmon. And every dollar we invest today in tackling climate change and moving to a cleaner and greener economy means $10 that we don't have to spend in the future. And so it was, I was just very disappointed. I thought the BC government, or I was hoping, that the BC government would lead by example, and it was just the 2016 budget was really a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and you mentioned that in your opening that you thought that a more appropriate carbon tax would be $40 a ton rather than the $30 it's at right now.
Need to move it up, and it's been mired at $30 a ton. And at one time, BC was a leader in North America and indeed the world for introducing a carbon tax, and people were rightfully impressed with that. But for the carbon tax to impact behavior, for the carbon tax to continue to be meaningful, it needs to be increased. And it's just one of many tools that we have at our disposal to be serious about tackling climate change. And we just can't constantly, it's not unique to the BC government. You see this with the federal government. You see this with governments, right across the world. And they all talk a good line about the importance of tackling climate change and the dangers, the very, very real dangers of climate change. But when push comes to shove, when it comes to actually changing actions and investing in public transportation rather than highways and increasing the carbon tax again and again and again and again, what you're seeing is government will put off to tomorrow what needs to be done today. It was an opportunity for the government to get back to being a leader on climate change, at least when it comes to the carbon tax, and they simply didn't do that. And so that means that people around the province are going to have to keep a close eye on the provincial government, and they're going to have to demand that we want better, that we You know, we don't have a long period of time in which to sort of fiddle while Rome burns. And the Earth is warming at an increasingly rapid pace. And we've had, I think they talked about, NASA was looking at sort of the most unusual months out of the last, I don't know how many, you know, hundreds of years. And it was, it was January 2006. It was December 2015 for these bizarre warming trends. It was, you know, November of 2015, and people see it. Like, you see flowers coming up months earlier than you would normally see. You see sometimes, you know, reaching in the lower mainland and in Vancouver 15 degrees in January. And I think the other day, not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago, it was 17 degrees in the Fraser Valley. That's scary when you're seeing the climate change that rapidly, and that, so, you know, that's a red flag to governments and saying, okay, you know, let's follow up on what we promised in Paris, and let's do more than pay lip service to our promises that were made there, that we have something that needs, you know, a crisis, really, that needs all hands on deck, and we can't squander opportunities such as budgets to not meaningfully tackle climate change.
Now, there was no money in the budget this week for alternative energy. What kind of alternative energy would you like to see the government put money into?
Well, what I'd like to see, and we very much support appropriate development of energy, whether it's solar or wind, but we'd also call for BC Hydro to remain publicly owned and intact and an integrated company. And one of the problems that happened, and a lot of people think, wow, low carbon energy, green energy, it's always a good thing. But we have something very unusual in North America, and we have a publicly owned utility, which is BC Hydro. And BC Hydro has produced low carbon energy from its big dams, firm energy that you can depend on 365 days of the year. And we were really the envy of North America for the vast majority of our energy, our electricity, over 90%, being produced by BC Hydro, which we own, and the dividends go back to public coffers. And then in 2001, the BC government decided to gamble with BC Hydro, and they said, we're going to allow private companies to develop run-of-river projects, which has been a very contentious issue. And that energy, electricity, was never meant for British Columbia. It was meant to be sold to California. But California has a renewable portfolio standard in place, and they don't consider river diversion projects and the energy they produce in BC to be green energy because there's too much of an environmental impact. And so today, BC Hydro and ratepayers, people like you and me, right across the province are saddled with $40 billion worth of energy purchase agreements to private power companies for electricity we don't need. And so what we need to be doing in British Columbia, we need to transition towards low-carbon energy. We need to make smart decisions, but we also need to realize that we have something very special here. We have something that is one of our best tools against climate change.
Well, thank you, Gwen, for joining us this morning and talking about this.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with Gwen Barley, National Policy Director with the Wilderness Committee.